Sin Sin Ming, Verses on Faith Mind, which we've been thinking of as trust song. Yes. The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. When neither love nor hate arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate by the smallest amount, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. If you wish to know the truth, then hold to no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the fundamental nature of things is not recognized, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail, like for without any benefit. The way is perfect as vast space is perfect, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our grasping and rejecting that we do not know the true nature of things. Live neither in the entanglements of outer things, nor in ideas or feelings of emptiness. Be serene and at one with things, and erroneous, that's like wrong views, will disappear by themselves. Mistaken views will disappear by themselves. When we try to stop activity to achieve quietude, our very effort fills us with activity. As long as we remain attached to one extreme or another, we will never know oneness. Those who do not live in the single way cannot be free in either activity or quietude, in either assertion or denial. Deny the reality of things, and you miss their reality. Assert the emptiness of things, and you miss their reality. The more we talk and think about it, the further we wander from the truth. So cease attachment to talking and thinking, and there is nothing we will not be able to know. To return to the root is to find the essence. But to pursue appearances or enlightenment in quotation marks is to miss the source. To awaken even for a moment is to go beyond appearance and emptiness. Changes that seem to occur in the empty world we make real only because of our ignorance. Do not seek for the truth. Only cease to cherish opinions. I'm going to keep changing the language a little bit from you to we and from like orders, like do not remain in a dualistic state. Let's not remain in a dualistic state. Let's avoid such easy habits carefully. If we attach even to a trace of this and that, of right and wrong, the mind essence will be lost in confusion, is lost in confusion. Although all dualities arise from the one, let's not be attached even to ideas of this one. When the mind exists undisturbed in the way, there is no objection to anything in the world. And when there is no objection to anything, things cease to be in the old way. When no discriminating attachment arises, the old mind ceases to exist. Let go of things as separate existences, and mind too vanishes. Likewise, when the thinking subject vanishes, so too do the objects created by mind. The arising of other gives rise to self. Giving rise to self generates others. Know these seeming two as facets of the one fundamental reality. In this emptiness, these two are really one, and each contains all phenomena. If not comparing nor attached to refined and vulgar, pure and impure, high and low, we do not fall into judgment and opinion. The great way is embracing and spacious. To live in it is neither easy nor difficult. Those who rely on limited views are fearful and irresolute. When we rely on limited views, we are fearful and irresolute. The faster we hurry, the slower we go. To have a narrow mind and to be attached to getting enlightenment is to lose one's center and go astray. Go off the path, let's say. When one is free from attachment, all things are as they are, and there is neither coming nor going. When in harmony with the nature of things, our own fundamental nature, we will walk freely and undisturbed. However, when mind is in bondage, so when mind is tied or imprisoned, the truth is hidden. Everything is murky and unclear. And the burdensome practice, the heavy, boring practice of judging, brings annoyance and weariness. What benefit can be derived from attachment to distinctions and separations? What good is it to hold on to our ideas of better and worse? If we wish to move in the one way, let's not dislike the worlds of senses and ideas. indeed to embrace them fully, is identical with true enlightenment. The wise person attaches to no goals, but the foolish person fetters himself or herself, ties herself or himself. There is one dharma without differentiation. Distinctions arise from the clinging needs, the holding on needs, the neediness of the ignorant, of the ignoring. To seek mind with a capital M, with the discriminating mind, is the greatest of mistakes. Rest and unrest come from illusion. With enlightenment, attachment to liking and disliking ceases. All two-ness comes from ignorant inference, so turning away and then guessing from there blindly. Liking and disliking dualities are like dreams, ghosts, hallucinations. It is foolish and pointless to try to hold on to them, to try to grasp them. Gain and loss, right and wrong, finally abandon all such thoughts at once. So there's still more, but I feel like it's so much and so long already that I'm going to stop for now. And I would love to hear if there were lines or what came across while listening.
Again, to stay simple. Nor love nor hate. I don't know if I want to be without love.
Yeah. He doesn't mean that love.
What love does he mean?
Neediness. What comes, the love that comes from neediness, like a bargain that we would make. When I get uncentered and feel lack, and then I think, ah, maybe this person can serve my purpose. So I need confirmation from that person. And I hate that other person. Immediately, both. It's the, where the getting away from and moving towards is one gesture. That's coming from having disconnected and experiencing lack. The fear that that lack is my deepest nature terrifies me, and so I jump into action. Instead of relaxing back into the actual true nature, I jump into getting some confirmation over here by pushing this other, what would deconfirm me kind of over here. Any other lines?
To the root of things, I think he said.
Mm-hmm. Return to the root.
Yes.
To return to the root is to find the essence. But to pursue appearances or enlightenment is to miss the source. To awaken even for a moment is to go beyond appearance and emptiness.
It's so funny always, because you go up, but it's going down mm-hmm. at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it feels more important to go down, like mm-hmm. literally having a root mm-hmm. from my tailbone mm-hmm. down.
Can people hear?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Cool. Good.
I think even in the beginning bits, I heard after the tailbone, I heard.
So it feels like going up, but feels more important to go down rather than up, than going to enlightenment.
What you first said was that it feels like going up mm. and there's also a going down mm. at the same time.
Yes.
And it feels to you more important to have an emphasis on the act of going down.
Yes.
In that going up and down.
Yes.
In that great way.
And it feels like when it's just going into the thought of enlightenment, it's going up only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dove and snake. Up and down. But I like that how you said it, how she said it, is that the actual experience when there's that upliftment is that there's also a going down, a grounding, which is this whole theme of this whole, the heaven and earth thing. When when I'm connected really to up or down, then both are there because they're not separate. But it's also somehow my experiencing that as not separate has an importance. It's almost like again the P, the bottom of the string of the P thing, or just in the teaching that I mentioned about how the garden is set up, where there's invisible realms, and the human place is the bridge between the two, which is this, it's like the image is an innocent child, adventuresome and innocent child, just walking on. There's not actually a bridge, but stepping onto the seeming abyss between visible and invisible and being the bridge. So it's not just like da-da-da-da-da, walking onto a nice bridge with a nice view of a cliff, but actually stepping onto nothing and being at and realizing this is home, not being attached to, is so home, and not thinking about, is so home, and so home includes the visible and invisible as not separate. And since we have all of this great training in our mind to think, it is often the gesture of coming down that needs to be active, where we are active. And then that going up happens along with that, naturally. But we often need to put emphasis to bring our energy down.
That was the line that's one of the lines, because they all stick out, really.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing.
Yeah.
The poem, actually.
Yeah.
But the one of not thinking and talking about it, the whole self and other, and then there's the we are, others come into being through self, da-di-da. That you can't think your way through it.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like the mouth open, speechless is like that abyss kind of. Without disliking the world of senses and ideas, also. Indeed, to embrace them fully is identical with true enlightenment.
I also wonder sometimes about the role of texts or books, because there's a lot written, and that's never the real experience.
Yeah.
It's impossible, of course. And when you don't speak or think, writing is a form of thinking, speaking. And reading could be a form of speaking or listening to.
Yeah.
What's the... No, I don't really know what my question is. What's the use of all those words, in a way? Not this poem, but there's a line somewhere, because it's not about the words, and still there are a lot of words, and a lot of wise words, or words that are witnesses of experiences. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's confusion, because I read a lot in my life, and I wrote a lot, and I write for a living. and the words losing their meaning in a way, because there were too much of them, I think.
Yeah.
And this is a very, although it's a long poem, you say, it's very subtle and very precise. And
yeah.
Probably no word could have been another word or in another place.
Mm.
Still, what do we have to do with all the words that are written?
Mm. I think an answer can come from that relaxing not relaxing as a rejection of something and not relaxing as to relieve the tension so that then I can build up tension again and then relax again, but really relaxing to where there's no need to react to words as a problem or as an answer, but words are fine. So from the relaxing place, words might be given sometimes. And then even when words are given, when they happen in writing or in speech, in listening or reading, it's not even sometimes the actual words have almost no importance. Sometimes the actual meaning of the words is important, but there's a respect for the whole dimension of what can be included in words that is not just the mental meaning given to the word. And there's still also respect for sometimes the importance of a meaning that goes with a word that is a reminder of something else. But the meaning is, someone could speak some language that we don't know, and there can be transformation by listening. And someone could speak words that we do know, and there could be transformation by listening, and it could include the meaning. We could sing the song and not know the meaning, and there's something that happens. We could sing the song and know the meaning, and there's something that happens. And both are possible, both are fine. But it's our kind of this disease that our addiction to the talking and thinking, coming from getting uncentered, feeling lack, and being frantically moving from there. That is, it's not the word so much, but that disease of uprooting ourselves and trying to grow from without roots. There's many, many teachings in all the many, so many different languages, and often it's when someone asked a question and someone responded. And that ends up also being helpful. Like, the third Zen patriarch must be, you know, many centuries ago. I don't know. I don't remember all of that history. But there's even the very human, like, when the mind is in bondage, when the mind is tied up or in prison, and the truth is hidden, everything is murky and unclear, and the burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. Like, he knows us inside. Like, how does he know us inside when I wasn't born? It's such an inside experience.
Isn't it a sharing thing? People that have written of their spiritual experiences, it's that thing of maybe like someone who needs to paint or something, that they don't just do it for themselves. It's,
yeah,
I share this with people. No?
Mm-hmm.
You can either go into psychological excess about words and stuff, mm-hmm, or just take it as is, or,
yeah,
go, oh, that's just a sharing.
Yeah.
It's a human expression of wanting it to. Yeah? Just,
yeah,
a human expression.
Yeah. And also an expression in human form of not separation. Like, I think we've all had that experience of, we could be in conversation with one person or several people, whatever, but let's say two people are talking and listening to each other. And what someone needs to hear might come out of their own mouth or the other person's mouth. Like, it's not even so much only someone needs to share this, but out of the non-separation, something can come through a voice in a particular situation, in a particular moment. And there's a rightness to the words coming, and there's not an ownership of the words. I also was happy to feel this time reading that much of it out loud. Mostly the feeling of easy. Like we started the whole conversation, or earlier on, we talked about the great way must be what's difficult, whether it's easy or difficult, what's easy, what's difficult. What are the easy habits to avoid carefully? And just to kind of, to practice feeling a treasure in the moments where the thinking is not dominant, where the talking is not dominant, and it's just life. Just living.
You said an interesting, well, very many interesting things, but one thing that stuck out to me was that he said to seek the capital mind, the mind capital M, with the small mind is futile or whatever.
He said the greatest of mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just really interested in what mind with a capital M is as opposed to mind with a small M.
Well, he's calling the whole poem is Verses on Faith Mind, and what he's talking about is the Great Way. So I think that, like in Zen, they have the concept of big mind and small mind, which I find a really lovely phrasing, because it feels really easy to feel what they mean by that, I think. Yeah. So to go from the movement of small mind, how it would try to find big mind, is the greatest of mistakes. It's not just futile, it's not just pointless, it's the greatest of mistakes. Which to me, it's such an emphasis that it can feel some of the how possibly to feel this, okay, we're talking about a place of ease and what's natural and the simplicity and the freshness of just living. But we're also getting a flavor of, there's a bit of a life or death kind of urgency as well. Like if the greatest of mistakes is not murder or something like that, the greatest of mistakes is to seek big mind with small mind, to let the small mind's movement be the movement towards big mind. That possibly is worse than, or that possibly is like killing, or, and that it possibly is not just a mistake for myself, but that I'm actually, it's possibly harmful for others.
Yeah.
And then if we turn it around, that to let these moments of simplicity and just not needing words to make it be, trusting that how things are, the enoughness of how things are, is life and life-giving, maybe not only for oneself. So I feel like I could go on a little bit longer reading, shall I, or is there more?
Okay.
It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet. Take a little rest, let the stomach digest. Okay. So that it just ended with rest and unrest derive from illusion. So the experience, even maybe, of rest or unrest comes from a hallucination. It reminds me of one line from those teachings in Hungary that I talked about in the garden, the invisible, and the human bridge. There's a line there that says, restful action and creative rest are true. And then that the paragraph that I ended with before ends with gain and loss. Right, I'll just read that whole thing. Rest and unrest derive from illusion, come from, are born from hallucination, something that doesn't exist. With enlightenment, attachment to liking and disliking ends. All dualities come from ignorant inference. Inference. So we're making a guess, having turned away from what we were looking at, we're trying to guess what we have no clue, no way of knowing about. All dualities come like that. They're like dreams, phantoms, which is like ghosts, hallucinations. It is foolish to try to grasp them. Gain and loss, right and wrong. Finally, abandon all such thoughts at once. If the eye, like the eye that we see with, never sleeps, all dreams will naturally cease. If the mind makes no discriminations, the 10,000 things are as they are, of single essence. To realize the mystery of this one essence, as one word also, one essence, to realize the mystery of this one essence, is to be released from all entanglements. When all things are seen without differentiation, the one self essence is everywhere revealed. No comparisons or analogies are possible in this causeless, relationless state of just this one. When movement stops, there is no movement, and when no movement, there is no stopping. When such dualities cease to exist, oneness itself cannot exist. To this ultimate state, no law or description applies. For the realized mind, at one with the way, all self-centered striving ceases. Doubts and irresolutions vanish, disappear, and the truth is confirmed in you. With a single stroke, you are freed from bondage. Nothing clings to you, and you hold to nothing. All is empty, clear, self-illuminating. with no need to exert the mind, no need to strive to push with the mind. I'll read that one again, that line. All is empty, clear, self-illuminating, self-lighting, with no need to exert the mind, small m. Here, thinking, feeling, understanding, and imagination are of no value. Thinking, feeling, understanding, and imagination are of no value. In this world, as it really is, in quotation marks, in this world, as it really is, there is neither self nor other than self. To know this reality directly is possible only through practicing non-duality. When we live this non-separation, all things manifest the one, all things express or show the one, and nothing is excluded. Whoever comes to enlightenment, no matter when or where, realizes personally this fundamental source. This Dharma truth, as one word, this Dharma truth has nothing to do with big or small, with time and space. Here, a single thought is as 10,000 years. Not here, not there, but everywhere, always, right before your eyes. Infinitely large and infinitely small. No difference, for definitions are irrelevant, and no boundaries can be discerned. No boundaries can be found or described or drawn. So I'm going to back up and come again. Here, a single thought is as 10,000 years. Not here, not there, but everywhere, always, right before our eyes. Infinitely large and infinitely small. No difference. For definitions are irrelevant, and no boundaries can be discerned. So likewise with existence and non-existence. So no difference. Also likewise with existence and non-existence. Let's not waste our time in arguments and discussion attempting to grasp the ungraspable. Each thing reveals the one. The one manifests as all things. To live in this realization is not to worry about perfection or non-perfection. To put our trust in the heart mind, as one word, to put our trust in the heart mind is to live without separation. So this is love. To put our trust in the heart mind, both capital, is to live without separation. And in this non-duality, We are one with our life source. One word. And then he says, words, words. The way is beyond language. For in it, there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. Anything you liked or that struck you or any comment?
Can you explain what food is like 10,000 years?
Yeah, I love that one. If I could speak about the line that said, here a single thought is as 10,000 years. I think it's easy because I'm sure we've had the experience where there was quietness that was not a stopping in that way. It was just a relaxation into creative rest or restful action. And whether there's a lot to be done or nothing to be done or we don't know or whatever the circumstances are, there's not worry in that. And there's not really also time so much. Even if we could keep track of time, it's not that burdensome practice. and then a thought comes, one thought, and it's as if we're so-called back in that old life that we were living before. And it's as if it's always been this way and always will. And what was that? Was that a dream?
Yeah.
That's how I would talk about this today. There may be other angles on it. If anyone else has a...
So the 10,000 years is just an expression of being back in time.
For me, and being back in time, like a... like cyclical, repetitive. Yeah.
Instead of before.
And then, sorry, just the next line we could hear now again. Like, here a single thought is as 10,000 years. Not here, not there, dash, but everywhere, always, right before our eyes. Doesn't that give the feeling of really being in the soup of the awake soup, kind of? Of not the burdensome practice of picking my head up and messing around with what I know nothing about, kind of, but just the let the longing pull you right into non-separation.
That right before our eyes does confuse me, though. It brings the opposite.
Why? To me, it's like we're up to here. Like, there's no... It's not... Often we're like this.
Yeah.
Like, we might be kind of more or less connected, and we have our root and all that, but we're still watching how we're doing and how they're doing and what's going on. And then right before our eyes is, like, everything. The basic goodness and everything, the vastness and everything.
So it's not one thought, then, that's right before our eyes. It's, like, the no thought.
Oh, it's the no thought, yeah. So it's here, a single thought, here in the great way, is how I understand it, or here in life. A single thought is as 10,000 years, not here and also not there.
Yeah.
Like, not just not here, but the great way as being not here and not there. So not kind of needing to land somewhere, but...
I understand something different.
What do you understand? Not here and not there?
Because of the thought we're not here nor there.
Okay, so to me, I don't see how, because it's not here, not there, dash. Not holding on to here or there, like I would be like, here I am, but if only I were in India. And when I'm in India, here I am, but if only I were in Corsica. Okay. To make a really gross example.
Yeah.
But everywhere, always right before our eyes. So whether I'm in India, whether I'm here, whether I'm in Corsica, anywhere I could be. So
yeah,
like,
so
Jahapad, Daha, Samahi, the okay. Where feet, their entrance. The entrance also is that creative rest, restful action. It's exactly when there's not the overemphasis on either aspect or idea, as an idea or whatever. But because of not emphasizing, there's a dropping in. Like in samadhi, samadhi. It's not the same word, but yeah. So why don't we have a few minutes silence?